every week on Sun Sounds. Every Monday and Wednesday morning, right after the Arizona Daily Star. We bring you the news from Green Valley, Sahuarita, Tubac, and Nogales. News with a local focus, just for you, including local opinions and letters from readers. It's the Green Valley News, every Monday and Wednesday morning at 9:30 on Sun Sounds.
And Tucson is a dynamic, trendy town, and what better way to hear about it than in the Tucson Weekly? The Tucson Weekly provides energetic, contemporary journalism that covers what Tucson is all about. They dig into local and national politics, the arts, music, food, and media. You can hear a roundup of their stories every Friday morning from 9:30 to 10 a.m. right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Be sure to tune in to the latest in science, activism, local education news, and more from the Tucson Weekly. That's every Friday morning at 9:30, right after the Arizona Daily Star here on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
And now, the wisdom of Mark Twain on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Why not go out on a limb? That's where the fruit is.
This is Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson, reading to make a difference for you. Stay tuned as we turn the page.
Welcome back to our final half hour of the Arizona Daily Star. I wanted to remind everybody that at Sun Sounds, we know loss of vision changes your life, but you don't have to limit your life. The people at Desert Low Vision can show you how to work with your loss of vision and move forward. Desert Low Vision has been dedicated to guiding people through the challenges of vision loss for decades with specific techniques and tools offered by Desert Low Vision. Just know that your vision loss does not mean you have to limit your life, and the people at Low Vision, Desert Low Vision, will show you how. And by the way, Desert Low Vision has been on the Sun Sounds team for many years. Let's see, it's going to be a hot one here in Tucson. The time is 9:02 here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. We're going to turn to the death notices here before we get to Amy Dickinson. And let's see, short list today. The deceased are from Tucson, unless otherwise noted. Jesus Alonso was 84, a musician from Mexico. June 14th, Adair Dodge. Wilbur S. Ames, 78, a professor. June 18th, Adair Dodge. Wayne Amanet, 55, restaurant manager. May 25th, Adair Dodge. David Cook, 51, April 15th, Adair Dodge. Fred Jones III, 59, a carpenter, June 17th, Desert Rose Heather, and Ruth Kelly, 100 years old, bless you, Ruth, comptometer operator, June 15th, Adair Dodge. That sounds like some sort of a precursor to a computer. At that age, she's going way, way back there, so a comptometer operator. Ruth Kelly. Well, anyway, let's see. Merle Osgood, 89, a farmer's co-op employee from Eloy, June 13th, Adair Dodge. Dennis Vannerman, 77, a laborer, June 1st, Adair Dodge. And finally, Gwendolyn Weber, 70, a business manager, June 14th, Adair Dodge. And now we're going to turn to the advice of Amy Dickinson. Why don't you try to stump me today, Barney? Give me a tough one.
Okay. Dear Amy, my youngest daughter, Sarah, 12, is as sweet as pie to those she loves. She also speaks her mind, sometimes too plainly. Her mother and I have always waffled between being happy that she sticks up for herself and concerned that her bluntness will alienate people. Recently, an older girl, Carrie, approached me at our public school. Carrie attends school with my older daughter. I introduced her to a group of kids nearby as a friend of my daughter's. Carrie responded by putting friends in finger quotes and then stating that your daughters hate me. Sarah just said, hello, go away to me. I jumped right on it with Sarah. How would that make you feel? How do you think it made me feel? How do you think it made her feel? I also tried to make Carrie feel a little better, but honestly, she's simply a tough kid to like. She never really gets into the conversation and has rough social skills. Of course, this is no excuse for my daughter's horrible behavior. Sarah is prepped to say, I am sorry I hurt your feelings and was so rude to you at the last encounter, but neither of our daughters want to be friends with her. Is there anything I can say or do to make Carrie feel better? Should I speak to her parents? I am saddened for this poor girl and ashamed of my daughter's insensitive remark. Signed, guilty in NC. I guess that's North Carolina.
I think so, yeah. Well, dear guilty, you did a nice job correcting your adolescent, and then you actually confirmed her unkind assessment of the girl she was so cruel to. Way to go, Dad. To me, it sounds as if Carrie is on the spectrum, which would explain her affect. On the spectrum means autistic. Your message to your daughter should be, I don't care what this other person is like, or if she is challenging or simply bugs you, you don't have to be friends with anyone you don't want to be friends with. You do have to be kind to others regardless. It's that simple. You owe her an apology, and you need to deliver it right now. Your daughter needs to learn that fierceness and kindness are actually two sides of the same coin. The most wonderful people are those who use their fierceness and bluntness to serve, not only themselves, but others. It's easy, lazy, and cowardly to be mean. If your daughter wants to be popular and well-liked, all 12-year-olds do, she will have to learn how to be brave enough to be nice to someone she doesn't want to befriend. Okay. That was it.
Oh, that's it. Oh,
next letter.
Oh, my gosh. Dear Amy, my husband's parents own a beautiful lake house where my husband and I have spent a week or two every summer for decades. 2 years ago, my husband and I invited three couples, our close friends, to spend a weekend with us there. Last week, a friend who was part of the group that vacationed with us 2 years ago texted me saying that she and our other friends were planning on contacting my in-laws to arrange dates for the group to vacation at the lake house. She said that she knows my husband and I are busy and might not be able to join them, but they'd like to go this year and don't want us to feel like we have to host them. Essentially, our friends planned a vacation without us to our family's house. I contacted my mother and father-in-law, who are incredibly generous and kind people. They were shocked by my friend's display of entitlement. I told my friend that my in-laws weren't ready to open their cabin to friends unless family was present, and she replied that it was fine. How do I let my friends know that this request / demand was rude and presumptuous? How do I stop this from happening in the future? Signed, offended, and annoyed.
The noive, I tell you. Let's see. Dear offended, wow, this takes entitlement to a whole new level. You could deliver a stronger statement by responding, this is a family home, your choice to bypass us to solicit an invitation from my in-laws is surprising. I wish you hadn't done that. If this person is aggressive enough to continue pushing, simply say no.
Dear Amy, bummed was a young guy with his first roommate. He was complaining because his roommate routinely wore his clothes, even his underwear, when the roommate's clothing was dirty. How hard is it to install a lock onto a bedroom door? Bummed needs to get one. Signed, Easy.
Well, dear Easy, a conversation about boundaries should precede the lock installation. Well, okay then.
To me.
Oh, yeah? well, Moving right along here, let's see. There was a story from the local section. Yeah, let's see. I was going to move on to Arizona lawmakers' comments about immigrants is inartful but not racist, a colleague says. Inartful, okay. What's this all about, I wondered. This is by, oops, let me get this up. This is by Howard Fisher, Capital Media Services, Phoenix. Embattled State Representative David Stringer has picked up an ally in his defense of his comments about the effects of immigration, his Prescott Republican seatmate. Representative Noel Campbell, who was at the luncheon a week ago where Stringer first made his comments, said he doesn't want to get into the merits of what his colleague said about immigration being an existential threat to the United States, nor his remarks about the problems of assimilating so many new foreigners. Campbell did acknowledge that Stringer's comments were, at the very least, inartful. Okay. But he said it would be wrong to paint Stringer as a racist, and he lashed out at others who he believes rushed to vilify him and seek his political scalp. Of a particular note was State GOP Chairman Jonathan Lyons calling on Stringer to immediately resign. That, in turn, resulted in other Republicans like Governor Doug Ducey and Arizona Chamber of Commerce President Glenn Hamer following suit and issuing similar statements. Campbell called it deplorable to use the comments to effectively declare Stringer a racist. I heard the entirety of David's remarks, he said, as did those at the forum. His concerns about the negative impacts of legal and illegal immigration due to the inability to assimilate into our American culture were applauded by those present and not perceived as racist. That mirrors Stringer's explanation last week to Capital Media Services about the message he was trying to get across. He said his remarks were meant to be a warning of sorts to his audience, which was largely, if not exclusively, Anglo, that the country they know is changing. I'm telling them you need to be prepared for this, he said. But for those not present at last week's event, Campbell said, the reaction has been different. This is a firestorm up here, he told Capital Media Services. Stringer's recorded comments were not limited to the threat of immigration to the national identity. He also said the integration of schools could prove impossible given that the majority of children in public schools are minorities. Wait, the majority of children are minorities? Meaning there aren't enough white kids to go around. Who said this? No, wait a minute. Stringer's recorded comments were not limited to immigration on the national. He also said the integration of schools could prove impossible given that the majority of children in public schools are minorities, meaning there aren't enough white kids to go around to integrate schools. Oh, boy. But the reaction to Stringer was not based entirely on the comments made at the Prescott luncheon. In a separate exclusive interview with Capital Media Services, Stringer said, while America has a history of being a melting pot, that has worked for people of European descent who don't have any accents and are indistinguishable. Something not true of Hispanics. I'm still reading the article here, folks. People of European descent who don't have any accents and are indistinguishable. Something not true of Hispanics, or for that matter, Asians or African Americans. And he said migrants from the south of the border in particular don't fully assimilate into the U.S. because, quote, their connections with their country are stronger than those who came here from another continent. Yeah. And with no further comment, back to you, Barney.
Oh, no, not racist.
No, no. Jump to judgment.
Good grief. Well, let's lighten it up a little here. Gorilla Coco, who learned sign language, changed image of apes, dies at 46. This by Seth Borenstein and Janie Haar of the AP, Dateline San Francisco. Coco, the gorilla, whose remarkable sign language ability and motherly attachment to pet cats help change the world's views about the intelligence of animals and their capacity for empathy. She has died at 46. Coco was taught sign language from an early age as a scientific test subject and eventually eventually learned more than 1,000 words, a vocabulary similar to that of a human toddler. She became a celebrity who played with the likes of William Shatner, Sting, Leonardo DiCaprio, Robin Williams, and Mr. Rogers. At her home reserve, where she was treated like a queen, she ran around with William's eyeglasses and unzipped Roger's famous cardigan sweater. In so doing, Coco showed the American public that a giant ape didn't have to be scary, but wanted to be tickled and hugged. The Gorilla Foundation said the 280-pound Western Lowland Gorilla died in her sleep at the Foundation's preserve in California's Santa Cruz Mountains Tuesday. Coco was not the first animal to learn sign language and communicate, but through books and media appearances, she became the most famous. Yet there was debate in the scientific community about how deep and human-like her conversations were. Coco appeared in many documentaries, including a 2015 PBS one and twice in National Geographic. The Gorilla's 1978 National Geographic cover featured a photo that the animal had taken of herself in a mirror. Coco, the individual, was super smart, like all the apes, and also sensitive, something not everyone expected from a King Kong type animal that movies depict as dangerous and formidable. Emory University primate researcher Franz De Waal said in an email Thursday, "It changed the image of apes and gorillas in particular for the better, such as through the children's book Coco's Kitten that many young people have grown up with. To view apes as nice and caring was new to the public and a big improvement. Coco watched movies and TV with her handler, saying her favorite book was The Three Little Kittens. Her favorite movies include the Eddie Murphy version of Dr. Dolittle and Free Willy, and her favorite TV show was Wild Kingdom. For her 25th birthday, she asked for and received a box of rubber snakes. In 1996, she even asked to be a mother. Despite attempts by her keepers to introduce male partners, Coco never became a mother. Instead, she had a series of kittens as pets. Coco's real name was Hanabi Ko, Japanese for fireworks child. She was born July 4, 1971 at the San Francisco Zoo. Francine Patterson was working on her doctoral dissertation on the linguistic capabilities of gorillas and in 1972 started to teach Coco sign language. Patterson and biologist Robert Cohn moved Coco to their newly established preserve in 1974 and kept teaching and studying her, adding a male gorilla in 1979. In 2004, Coco used American Sign Language to communicate that her mouth hurt and used a pain scale of 1 to 10 to show how badly it hurt. Coco represents what language may have been 5 million years ago for people, Cohn said in 1996. That's the time that gorillas and humans separated in evolution.
And that was an amazing story. I remember it caused philosophers to redefine what humanity is. I mean, what is different about us than other animals? They keep finding things they can do that they used to define humanity as being like using tools. Then they discovered chimpanzees use tools. So anyway, yes, blurring the line there. Now I'm going to go back to another segment of Tim Steller's column, because this looks kind of interesting here. This is why I kind of lose it with high technology. Deucey bots are born. What? The governor's re-election campaign began this week, and with it was born a crop of bots. These were Twitter accounts that appeared early this week and vigorously supported Deucey using the hashtag SecureArizona hashtag. That's SecureAZ. Reporters like my colleague Hank Stevenson started checking into who these new Twitter users are and found that they were fake profiles. by using reverse image searches, which allow you to find the source of a photo on the internet, Stevenson was able to show that the images on the accounts belonged to, among others, an Irish singer, a Briton who works at the Royal Society for the Encouragement of the Arts, manufacturers and commerce, Royal Society for the Encouragement of Arts, Manufacturers and Commerce, and a Chicago counselor. The coach of the Azerbaijani national judo team also got into the act. His photo was used on a fictitious account bearing the name of Robert Schmidt, who described himself as a proud Arizonan Republican. Ducey 2018 and Trump 2020. The Azerbaijani national judo team coach. Okay. The purpose of bots is to create the appearance of support for a person or point of view. And when my colleague Joe Ferguson asked Ducey about the bots Thursday in Tucson, the governor responded, "With all these issues, we need to deal with in state government, Joe. You're going to ask me about bots?" Okay, well, thank you for asking, Joe. Now we know all about that. Back to you, Bernie.
Oh, my goodness. Trump wrong about North Korea nukes. Remains of U.S. servicemen by Robert Burns, the AP. Washington. President Trump is trumpeting results of his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un that get ahead of reality. He is declaring that North Korea has already begun ridding itself fully of nuclear weapons following an agreement with Kim in Singapore earlier this month, even though his Defense Department says otherwise. Trump also maturely claimed the return of remains of U.S. servicemen missing from 1950-53 Korean War. A look at how his statements compare with the facts. Trump. The big thing is it will be a total denuclearization, which has already started taking place. Remarks Thursday at cabinet meeting. The facts. That's not what his Pentagon chief, Jim Mattis, says when asked Wednesday by a reporter whether he had seen any sign that North Korea had begun steps towards denuclearization. Mattis replied, "I'm not aware of any. Obviously, we're at the very front end of the process. Detailed negotiations have not begun." At the summit, Kim committed to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but no details were worked out. In May, prior to the summit, North Korea demolished temples at its Seoul underground nuclear test site, although outsiders have not inspected the result. Its nuclear program has many other elements, including nuclear materials, production facilities, nuclear warheads, ballistic missiles, and missile launchers. Next, Trump. "We got back our great fallen heroes. The remains sent back today. Already 200 have been sent back," remarks Wednesday at a rally in Duluth, Minnesota. The facts. No remains have been returned. Although Pentagon officials say they are prepared to receive them, although the Singapore declaration said this would happen immediately, U.S. officials have given no indication that North Korea has committed to any specific timetable for the return. On Thursday, in remarks at a cabinet meeting, Trump modified his claim, saying, "They've already sent back or are in the process of sending back the remains of our great heroes who died in North Korea during the war." Aside from uncertainty over when North Korea will return the remains it has collected over the years, it's unclear whether all will be in a condition to permit their positive identification or whether they all are even Americans. A number of Allied soldiers who fought alongside the U.S. during the war also are missing. Nearly 7,700 American service members are listed as unaccounted for from the Korean War, of which an estimated 5,300 were lost in North Korea.
Okay, let's see. I think I'll do around the nation here. One more U.S. worker gets mystery ailment. This is from Washington. Medical tests have confirmed that one additional U.S. embassy worker has been affected by mysterious health incidents in Cuba The State Department said Thursday, bringing the total number to 25. The new medically confirmed worker is one of two that were recently evacuated from Cuba after reporting symptoms. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said the other worker is still being evaluated by doctors. Prior to the newest incident, the most recent medically confirmed case from Cuba had been in August 2017, Nauert said. The confirmed Cuba patients have been found to have a range of symptoms and diagnoses, including mild traumatic brain injury, also known as concussions. They and others suspected to be affected have been brought for testing to the University of Pennsylvania, where specialists in brain injury enlisted the U.S. government. Specialists in brain injury enlisted by the U.S. government have been screening, treating, and studying American personnel evacuated from both Cuba and China. Let's see. Initial okay given for supremacist rally. This is from Washington. An organizer of last year's deadly white supremacist rally in Virginia has been granted initial approval to host another rally in August, this time in the heart of the nation's capital. The National Park Service said it has approved an application for the Unite the Right anniversary rally to be held in front of the White House. Other details are still being finalized. Organizer Jason Kessler's application describes it as a white civil rights rally. He says he wants elected officials in Washington to know that the violence that killed a woman and injured others in Charlottesville was provoked by what he's calling civil rights abuse. The city of Charlottesville denied Kessler's application to hold an anniversary rally there. And questions, let's see, next piece, questions raised over police shooting of teen, East Pittsburgh. A 17-year-old boy fatally shot by a police officer in Pennsylvania. Seconds after he fled a traffic stop, did not pose a threat to anyone, a lawyer for the family of the teen said. Civil rights attorney Lee Merritt said late Wednesday he doesn't see any apparent justification for the use of deadly force by an East Pittsburgh police officer that left Antoine Rose Jr. dead. And that's all the time we've got, sad to say, for the Arizona Daily Star. I hope you stay around with us next for the Tucson Weekly. And we hope you have a very cool day. It's going to be 110, so take care and keep cool. Drink water. What am I trying to say?
Hydrated,
yes. Keep hydrated and stay in the shade. Stay inside. Take it easy. Have a nice weekend, folks.